My name's Greg. I'm an alcoholic and an addict, and I'm also dual diagnosed. I appreciate y'all being here. I may not look at the screen, and just bear with me. The Zoom thing and the audio is kind of dysregulating for me, so I may look back and things like that. Well, let's see. 53 years old. I've got a master's degree in mechanical engineering. You know, I came from kind of a middle class home. You know, things weren't perfect, but you know, they were what they were, and I feel quite fortunate for that upbringing. It's kind of interesting, and I'll share some of these things that some of the things that shaped me as a young child. I wouldn't really realize until I got to be 50 and got some exposure to some other things, just how much they impacted me. So I was born in Victorville, California. My father was in the Air Force. He was a fighter pilot. You know, he provided for the family financially. But you know, he did some other things. I mean, he introduced me to nature and hunting and fishing. And you know, and for that I'm grateful. You know, there were some other characteristics about him that, you know, I just didn't like. And I saw those interactions, especially.
Hey Google, play my whales mating playlist.
That, you know, I kind of said I'm not going to be that person. You know, he wasn't an alcoholic. Sometimes I joked I wish he would have drank. It might have chilled him out some.
Hey Google, play my whales mating playlist.
She was a good person. You know, she did her best. I never realized until, I guess in my 20s, whenever I was diagnosed with mental illness, that she was actually suffering from a mental illness. Yeah, I spent, my first 10 years effectively, in Shreveport, Louisiana. I don't remember much about that. I do remember, it's kind of interesting. I remember a picture of me, like in, I guess it was like kindergarten, and I had a big smile on my face and I was just happy. It was, you know, you could just see the excitement and the energy and stuff on my face. And, at that point in my life, I'd been peeing the bed for about 2 years and chewing my fingernails. I peed the bed until I was 15, and I just thought that was kind of normal. You know, my parents, there was not a lot of love there that they showed. You know, on the outside, you know, somebody looking in, you would look at our family and you're like, okay, they're just kind of average middle class. Inside it wasn't quite that way. And, you know, there are people, you know, whose stories, you know, are much worse in regards to what they were exposed to, you know, as growing up. And, you know, but for me, you know, what I've learned is, you know, this is kind of my truth, right? My trauma is my trauma. And it affects people different ways. I was kind of an introverted kid. You know, because of fear and kind of insecurity and not really knowing what to make of, you know, my home life and stuff, you know, I just kind of stayed away from people. I mean, I had a few friends in, you know, elementary school and things like that. But you know, just wasn't really a part of, right? I mean, my mother didn't take me on play dates and things like that. She got me involved in swimming because I needed to learn how to swim. And I had a real fear of water and a real fear of heights. And I told this story, and I'll tell it real quick. I told the diving instructor, or the swim instructor, that I couldn't jump off the diving board because my mom said so. My mother found out, and she took me up there one night really late. or it was dark, and there was a pool was full of people and stuff, and I just couldn't do it. I was shaking like a leaf, and I remember that, shaking like a leaf, because I'll mention that later. And she took me home. She took my clothes off. She pretty much beat me, and then took me back and made me jump. And she told me if I didn't, that she would do it again. You know, my dad, you know, there were things that were going on in the house and he never really explained it to me. And I just kind of discounted it. I always used to joke that he had rose colored glasses. Boy, did he. I've got a brother and sister, that are, 6.5 and 8 years, younger than me. And, you know, I grew up kind of, I was the oldest child and things like that. And so we never really bonded, as, you know, as siblings. And, you know, school, you know, elementary school and middle school and stuff, you know, the expectation was you'll do good in school and, you know, and you'll behave. You know, and that's what I did. You know, I had an affinity for, mechanical things and building things and tearing stuff apart, you know, and I love to run around in the outdoors. You know, the outdoors for me, even today, you know, that's my church. You know, that's where I come back and, you know, whatever's going on in my life, it just, I'm at peace. You know, I'm very grounded. You know, in middle school, I started to play sports and I got involved in Boy Scouts because I needed an outlet. You know, like I said before, I didn't have the confidence or whatever to, you know, kind of be a kid. I mean, I was, but I, you know, I was not. And so for me, sports and scouts and school, you know, that was my outlet. You know, that's where I started to, you know, try to develop my, you know, my mind and my emotional, you know, characteristics and things like that. You know, I had a scout master that, you know, and I had some teachers and stuff in high school and middle school that, you know, were very influential. You know, that people sometimes talk about, you know, it takes a tribe. You know, I had a grandmother and grandfather. They were definitely in my life, before I was about 8 years old, but because of alcohol and health issues and stuff like that, they just kind of stayed to themselves after that. And I didn't really see much of them. I used to go spend the summers with them. And it was amazing. I mean, you know, my grandfather, for all the horrible stories that I heard about him and stuff, he was very kind to me. And so was my grandmother, the stuff she went through, and, you know, to have that kind of love and caring, it was really good. Let's see. It's kind of funny. I was thinking about one of my best friends well into my 40s, and we still stay in contact some. He always used to say, man, you get grounded a lot. And I was sitting there thinking back to some of the things that I would get grounded for. And it was just sort of like, you know, this is kind of just a kid being a kid. And you know, and I could kind of have a resentment about that, or, you know, drag it around or whatever. And, you know, I later did a thing called a timeline and stuff. And some of these things, you know, started to make me realize that, you know, as I said earlier, you know, some of the bad things that happen in our lives, you know, we don't wish to shut the door on them, and they actually become a strength later. You know, in school, it's academically, you know, I was in the top 5% of my class, all throughout high, you know, middle school and high school. You know, guys started talking about girls and stuff like that, and I was just like, I don't know what that's all about. I got a crush in eighth grade, and I chased that girl for like 3 years. Finally got her to go to the prom with me one time, and back in my late in my 20s, and I found out that she was a lesbian, and I was like, okay. You know, one of the things that I noticed was that, you know, I was very intelligent, but I had issues with my memory. And I, you know, my drinking really didn't start until I was like 15. I don't think I got drunk until I was like 17. But I noticed that I had memory problems, and it's like, you know, how could a guy like this who was so intelligent have memory problems? And it was because, you know, on the inside, I was in a lot of fear, a lot of uncertainty, you know, uncertainty about what I was exposed, you know, what I was growing up in, and, you know, and just kind of expected to figure it out on my own, you know? And I think, give me one second. Somebody's pinging me. Janine, if you can send Christina a text message and tell her it started. I get to outsource some of my stuff. What was I saying? But yeah, the memory thing and the stuff that was going on around me was, it kind of baffled me for years. You know, it's like my grades showed that I was very intelligent, but, you know, I used to say, you know, at the end of a semester, end of the school year, it's like, I would forget things, you know, all this studying, I'm such a smart guy. And it's like, boom. I think it was about 11, when, you know, some of the things, you know, and maybe it had to do with adolescence too, you know, but some of the things that I was exposed to, you know, the fights and the arguing and, you know, my mother, her vicious tongue that she used to talk to me with, you know, I started to stand up for myself. And, you know, at probably 8 or 10, you know, I stood between my parents as they were, you know, fighting, physically fighting and verbally fighting. And I was a scared little boy. You know, at 14, you know, my dad went after my mom one night. She was intoxicated. My mom really didn't drink. She maybe drank once a year, maybe once every year and a half around a holiday or some event of life, whether it be a death or, you know, a separation or something like that. And she really wouldn't drink that much, maybe a bottle of wine, you know, two bottles of wine, and she turned into the devil woman. But anyways, you know, there was one night where, you know, my dad threw her down the stairs and was going after her, you know, and at that point I stepped in and I basically beat him into submission, and he threatened my life, and, you know, it didn't turn out well. What was said was not right, but, you know, in the end, you know, it kind of created some space for me, and it was interesting too, because it kind of changed things, you know, at least for me. Sports wise, I got into it because I needed an outlet, and, you know, I was around some really good men as coaches, and, you know, they had expectations of me. And I would, you know, I'd always give them 110%. You know, what 10th grade, I was, you know, I was on the varsity team, and, you know, we were a 5A school here in Austin. And, you know, and by the time I got to my junior year, you know, I was starting. And by the time I was my senior year, I was starting and going both ways. You know, but I didn't really have a, you know, I didn't have a social life. You know, I wasn't a party guy. I was just, you know, it's like school and work and sports and all of these things. And I graduated and I was like, I'm gone. I'm done. And the only thing that I had as a goal was, you know, my dad was at the Air Force Academy, and he was like, you know, you're going to go to the Air Force Academy. And I was like, okay, let's go do that. And I was there for about a month, and I decided that I didn't want to live that dream. because I didn't want to grow up to be like my, I didn't want to become the man that my father was. I mean, he had his good points, but that was just not who I was. So anyways, I went to A&M and, it was kind of at that point where, you know, my alcohol usage started, and my experimentation with drugs, you know, started. And it kind of loosened me up a bit. You know, I went into the mechanical engineering department, and ended up getting a master's there. You know, but the whole time, you know, I was just like, I was still in a lot of fear. I didn't really have any goals of my own, anything that looked congruently with me. You know, I discovered women and, you know, whatever, just, you know, it was what it was. You know, I had a couple of girlfriends, and I would start to get emotionally connected with them, and I would become very just scared. Just, you know, it's like, I don't, you know, whenever I was 14, I said, I don't want to ever be married and I don't ever want to have kids, because what I had grown up in, I was like, I'm afraid that I will pass that on. You know, I in my 30s or in my 20s, I dated, you know, a couple of women that were, you know, today, you know, I'm still kind of Facebook in contact with them, and they're good people. And I just stepped away from that. But, when finally got, you know, I got my graduate degree, and I thought about going to Peace Corps, because even though you know, I had my degree and I'd actually, you know, graduated graduate school with a 3.2 and undergrad with a 3.0, I just didn't, I was scared. I felt, you know, I felt like I was less than, and very uncertain. I took a job in a high tech company. I was with that company for 24 years. That was my first job out of college. And up until 2018, that's where I was employed. You know, I was single focused, you know, work, and, you know, you work hard and you play hard. You know, and, you know, in college, you know, I drink on the weekends, the end of the semester, you know, there was definitely some blackout periods. I did have, and that's one thing I forgot to mention. I did have two episodes of, panic attacks and thoughts of suicide, because I did not know what was going on. You know, I later described it as I had one foot on the brake and one foot on the accelerator. I was like depressed and had a panic attack at the same time. It's really strange. So I got married. I dated, and I was with this girl for about 3 years. You know, the thing that we said was, you know, whenever we started dating, it was, you know, we weren't going to have kids. And that didn't last too long. And, you know, I guess we were, been married about 9 months, and she said that she wanted to have kids and she didn't believe that she could live the rest of her life without them. And I said, I've got to go. And so I went back to focusing on my career. You know, I hunted, I fished, you know, things like that. I did not have a close connection with my family. There were long periods of time, like years at a time, where I had no contact with my mother. And my father, you know, he would send me a card on my birthday, and, you know, I'd go and stay with him, you know, whenever I was off for the summers. And then, you know, he remarried, and my stepmother, who I kind of call my second mom, you know, they were together for probably about 10 or 12 years. And so I just, one, you know, I was drinking, you know, not every night or anything like that, but one day I woke up and I said, you know, I'm tired of feeling this way. You know, my experimentation with drugs was, I was like, you know what? I really like these, but I like them too much. And so I'm going to step away from those and just drink. You know, for me, it's like, well, I could have got there quickly, or I just got there slowly, and I did finally get there. But I got tired of waking up in the morning with a hangover. And so I just decided to stop. And I had 3 years of chemical sobriety. You know, emotional sobriety, you know, was actually pretty good. I was running a lot. I was working a lot, and I was running a lot. I had actually started to develop some friendships. And, you know, people used to say that I'd run like Forrest Gump. You know, I ran a few marathons, or a few half marathons, you know, bunch of 10Ks, but I love to run. I mean, that was, you know, the breathing and then, you know, just being alone, you know, and allowing my head to kind of calm down. You know, it was amazing. And one night a buddy of mine called me and said, "Hey, let's go dancing." You know, and I was like, "Yeah, sure." He's like, "Let's have a drink." I was like, "Yeah, sure." I woke up the next morning going, "Where's my wallet? Who's this woman? Where's my truck?" And it was back on. I met my second wife, at Kerrville Music Festival. And, it just so happens that she was in the liquor industry. And so, you know, take a budding alcoholic and a woman who's in the liquor industry who brings home samples all the time. And it can be a lot of fun. We were together about 3 years, and she said, you know, "Hey, I want to have kids." And I was like, "Oh gosh, here we are again." And I said, "No." And, at that point I really started drinking a lot, and I was struggling with my anxiety and depression quite a bit. And you know, with my job, it's really funny. I always got great reviews. I always excelled, this, that, and the other. But I was really driven by insecurity and, you know, and fear, and always like, you know, I'm going to lose my job, and then what am I going to do? You know, that kind of a mentality. You know, I was very, probably in some regards, I was very resistant to change. So she went away. She came back on a Christmas day, and she said, "You know, I can't live without you." And, you know, I was like, you know, I don't want to spend the rest of my life alone. Because she, for, you know, a few years, she brought me a lot of joy and a lot of peace, you know, in spite of everything else. And so got married, had my first son, his name is Adrian, had my second son about 2 years later. His name is Shane. Bought a house, got married, had two kids in the span of 2.5 years. And at that point, and plus working, you know, 50 to 60 hours a week. And whenever I work, I mean, I'm all in. You know, I'd wake up in the morning after, you know, whatever amount I drank and how often ever I drank, you know, but I was always there and I was always, you know, pushing myself. But anyways, it was that point where my drinking stepped up, took it to another level. You know, and I had, you know, the benzos, kind of thrown in the mix there on and off because I was so still under, you know, psychiatric care and counseling and stuff. And, for about 2 years, you know, basically I worked, I was not present, you know, with my kids nor my wife. And so I drank, I slept, and I worked. The one thing that probably kept me a little bit sane was, I had an opportunity, and I hunted a little bit, you know, in my early 30s and stuff, but I had the opportunity to become a hunting guide, on a ranch, and I was there actually for 13 years. You know, it did a lot for me, but I also went out there and I drank a lot. I used to drink with the clients all the time, you know, till 3 or 4 in the morning, and then wake up at 5:30 or 6 and say, "Hey, let's go, guys." One night my wife came to me, my ex-wife Bridget, and she said, "You've got to go." And I looked at her and I said, "I know." And so I moved out to Buda, out on 300 acres. And, you know, for the next 2.5 years, I was, you know, I didn't really have anybody to answer to, you know, other than my job. And so, you know, that's whenever I gave up beer and I started drinking Scotch whiskey, and it was on. So, January 2014, I called her one morning and I said, I'm not in a good place. I didn't know what DTs were. I didn't know what pancreatitis was, but I knew I wasn't in a good place. And they took me to, the emergency room in Kyle, Texas. I woke up 4.5 days later, after being in a drug-induced coma, because they felt like that was the only way that they were going to be able to detox me and I not die. She looked at me and said, what are you going to do? I said, well, I guess I'm going to go to rehab. I have no idea where that came from. But I knew that I needed help. You know, was I an alcoholic? Yeah, I was an alcoholic, but I didn't know any other way to live life. Right? Your head's always squirrely around and you're having anxiety attacks and depression and stuff like that. And it's like, man, I just want my head to stop. And so I went to rehab. I was there for 30 days. It took, I was in such bad shape. It basically took me 30 days to just kind of put myself back together. You know, I tried to do things and stuff like that, but I mean, I could barely walk. Even, you know, up until like 3 weeks I was there. So, you know, I came back. I didn't do a sponsor while I was there. I didn't work the steps. You know, I did the psychology portion of it, but that was that other part that I did not do. I relapsed about 14 days later, and I went back. I was with a guy. His name is Steve. He was my counselor. He was the one that, you know, the relapsers. And one day he asked me, he said, Greg, he goes, it's obvious to me that you love others. You know, there's that Bible verse, you know, love others as you love thyself or something like that. He goes, it's obvious that you love a lot of people. He said, but you love yourself. And I cried. I can't tell you the last time that I cried, not under the influence. I looked at him and I said, okay, what do I have to do? I was an introverted engineer. I couldn't speak well in front of people. You know, I was restless, irritable, and discontent in my own skin, even whenever good things were going around. People used to give me compliments, and I was like, please stop. Don't give me that compliment. I'm not worthy of that. You know, I did everything that he asked me to do, and then some. I was very serious about it. I was like, if I don't do this thing, I may not live, or I may end up in an institution, or, you know, whatever. So I came back to Austin. I got a sponsor that was recommended by me, you know, and this particular sponsor, and I won't share a whole lot, but, been around for a long time and has gotten a lot of people sober. And I was like, okay, this is my sponsor. And I was a part of that and stuff like that. And one day I was having a panic attack, a horrible panic attack. For me, prayer didn't work. And I never knew at that point. I didn't know what meditation was all about. I thought you were just supposed to breathe and close your eyes and your mind was going to go silent. Well, the more I tried it, the more I thought about it, the more stressed out I got. And I called my sponsor and he goes, you're selfish, you're self-centered, and you're just, you know, you're trying to be the actor. And he said some other things to me, and I was like, I gotta go. I called a friend of mine, who I met. He was my roommate for 4 days, and then he left. And I called Troy, and I said, Troy, I need help. And he said, do I have to get in my truck and from Laredo and drive up there? And I said, no, I need you to talk to me. I let that sponsor go. I was cordial about it, but I was like, I gotta go find somebody else. I was into service work. Service work had always been a part of me. I did Meals on Wheels. You know, I did Boy Scouts. I volunteered. You know, whenever people would ask me to do something, you know, it's like, yeah. And so, you know, I was like, okay, this service work thing for me is a very easy thing. I'm very giving. The problem was that I didn't acknowledge for myself, you know, mentally and at a spiritual or emotional, whatever term you want to use, I didn't let that fill me back up, right? I didn't want to feel that positive stuff because it was foreign to me. It's like, what the hell? I mean, there were some things, don't get me wrong. I mean, there were some things, you know, that were positives and stuff like that, but that recognition thing was just wasn't there. I also realized that, you know, even in my marriages, you know, I connected with the women that I married. You know, I was committed to them. I never cheated. I never even cheated on a girlfriend. I mean, that's what kind of Boy Scout I was. But I didn't connect with them at a spiritual or an intimate level, right? That's the way we're programmed or designed, or the way God made us, or whatever higher power thing, you know, that's important. And it just wasn't there. And so with the service work thing, that was part of it. I had a couple of sponsors, and I finally got to a point to where it's like, you know what? I'm tired of meeting with my sponsor and talking about my defects of character and talking about, you know, how much I drank and, you know, did I think about drinking and all that stuff. And I went away from the recovery program, and I was actually a part of Austin alumni group, and I spoke a couple times, and I took meetings out to the ranch and things. And I met a girl in recovery, a woman in recovery. And, you know, just like I did with my mother, just like I did with my second ex-wife, I rescued her, because that's what I was supposed to do, right? You know, things were okay for about a year. She didn't, you know, she was in recovery. You know, she did not have a program of recovery. She didn't, you know, seek any outside services, you know, for her mental health issues and stuff. And, about a year in, you know, she was getting kind of tired of living out there in Buda, and she's like, I want to move into a house. And I was like, I just can't do that. I never saw it coming. She hit me right on the jaw, and it about knocked me out. She's 135 pounds dripping wet. And I just kind of shook it off, and I was like, you can't do that again. That was a big red flag for me. She physically abused me a couple of more times over the next couple of years. You know, the verbal abuse, and just the sucking of the energy out of me was got to be quite some intense. I had a lot of uncertainty with my job because I'd been away, you know, for the rehab thing, and I'd kind of topped out of my career. I mean, I was still producing and I was still getting accolades, but I had a lot of uncertainty there. In 2016, I spent a month on the couch shaking like a leaf. And I had no desire to drink, but I had no idea what was going on. You know, my psychiatrist, he threw every kind of medicine that he could at me, and not, obviously not addictive, because I said, I don't want to go down that path, because of my addiction. And it just didn't work. And I had isolated a lot, you know, from people around me, you know, my family, you know, they're not a part of my family. So anyways, fast forward a little bit, because I'm kind of rambling here. I had another one of those episodes in 2017, and I went back out. My chemical addiction got me into a program, called Tucson, Arizona. The recovery, the 12-step programs and stuff like that. And I'd had therapy before, but it was always called what I called decompression therapy. It opened my eyes to a whole different thing. The last week that I was there, the first time I was there, they give you basically this test. It's kind of like taking the SAT. And they said, you've got general anxiety disorder and depression. And I was like, yeah. And they go, and you're kind of moderate PTSD. And I was like, what? Like, I've never been to war. I'm not a first responder or whatever. And they're like, well, you know, you're kind of like a fireman or an EMS person. You know, you're not bad, but you know, that's kind of where you score. And I was like, no kidding. I went home and I read a bunch, and I was like, okay. I had another one of those episodes. I ended up marrying my third wife, my third ex-wife, and we were supposed to go on our honeymoon to, Brazil. And, I was struggling a lot, and I had started drinking again. And I was like, I got to go back to Tucson, Arizona. And I did. And I was in the trauma recovery program. And my process group was probably six or seven other women. For a man who disassociates by emotionally disassociates, right? That's my protection mechanism. You know, alcohol was a part of it, the way that I didn't deal with emotions. But, you know, I also, even in times of sobriety, you know, not drinking, that's what I would do. And, people would be like, oh, that's horrible. You're in a group full of women. And I just would look at them and I'm like, it's an amazing experience. Those women shared things, I mean, there were certain things I did not share. But I could feel the emotion. I could hear it. I could see it. And I was exposed to a lot of other treatment modalities, which some of them worked and some of them didn't. And, So anyways, came home. I went back out again because I couldn't separate myself from my ex. I ended up losing my job. I couldn't go back. There's a lot to that story. And, I tried to drink myself to death a couple of times. I was not successful. I basically went and checked myself into a hotel room, and I woke up July 14th of last year, and I said, shit, I can't drink myself to death. And I was like, I know what I need to do, you know, and what had been ingrained in me being a part of AA and some of that, you know, the therapy that I've been through the chemical rehabs and the trauma mental health rehabs. I was like, if I can string together 60, 90 days, hopefully that stuff will come back. And I'll be able to implement it. And I did. So moved into a sober house, you know, got a sponsor, got involved with AA, did a lot of service work for 4 months. I worked at Habitat Restore, working basically 50 hours a week as a volunteer. I called it my little petri dish of life. You know, I got to practice those principles in all of my affairs. For me, it was kind of easy, or it wasn't a challenge, or there wasn't a lot of fear of doing it in the rooms of recovery or with groups who were in recovery. That was an amazing experience, because what I started to figure out was I had a lot going for me. You know, all those negative messages that I've been told and all those expectations that have been placed on me by my parents and society, they kind of fell away. And so I was on disability for a period of time, and I thought I'd get a job, and I was close, and it didn't happen. And then I decided to take a job at Lowe's. And this whole time, you know, I'm active in AA. You know, there's a men's meeting, an NA meeting that I go to. You know, I meditate. I meditate as best I can all throughout the day, but definitely in the morning. You know, I don't pray. I should, or I don't, or whatever. You know, just it is what it is. I don't have a perfect program, but who does, I guess. But it seems to work for me. And took a job at Lowe's, and I ended up becoming a full-time employee there because of COVID, and I didn't want to go back into my profession because of the uncertainty of that. And I've been living off my IRA, and introverted engineer, can't relate to people, things like that. In May, I sold $130,000 of appliances. In June, I sold $110,000 of appliances. The people who have been doing it for years, like 10 years, 20 years, the closest one sold 60. Granted, it's COVID, and people are practicing retail therapy. But just like I had discovered, at Habitat while I was, volunteering, was Greg's actually a pretty good guy, and he's got a lot going for him in spite of, right? Lost my job, you know, 53 years old, I should be retired. Right now I'm camping out in a pop-up trailer out in Creedmoor, and I'm loving it. Sure, I bitch and complain and whatever, you know, that's just kind of who I am, but I always wake up in the morning and go, it's another day. You know, I don't have problems. I have opportunities. And I look forward to those opportunities, you know. I don't have a lot of contacts in the recovery room, you know, that I'm very, very close with. Charles, my sponsor, my mentor, my friend, that man's told me more times that he loves me and hugged me more than probably my father ever did. And remember, I don't cry. That's the power of the program. A man who will love me unconditionally. I have some very strong people in my trauma, you know, group. One of them is my mentor, and one of them is one of my litter mates. And they give me that connection back to that, you know, we call them spiritual tools in the rooms of AA. They remind me of those things that I need to do, to deal with my trauma. I'm not a trauma survivor. I'm a trauma thriver. Just like, you know, I'll never be recovered from my addiction. I will always be recovering, and that's okay. Because any time that I think I got it, right, and I want to pick up a drink, or, you know, or I don't want to take care of myself, and I don't want to love myself in spite of, and I want my life to be driven by fear. Whenever that happens, I'm going to the liquor store. You know, I've lost a lot, right? It was said earlier about, you know, the loss of things and the records of our past and things like that. It has stripped away so much, and it's allowed me to grow and learn and become somebody that I actually love. Yeah, I've got my quirks about me and stuff like that. It's like I've got a stuffed animal. Thanks, Foghorn. Justin, I hope you're watching. You did this to me. In spite of everything, you know, I still have a pending legal thing against me. In spite of everything that's going on right now, especially in the world, right, people are dying and there's a lot of financial and uncertainty and stuff like that. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my higher power, whatever. I am in such a peaceful place, and I never thought it to be possible. I'm grateful. I really, truly am. I'm grateful to be an alcoholic. I'm grateful. I'm grateful for my life journey, right? I always struggled with what was my purpose in life, and I read a book by Viktor Frankl. Called Man's Meaning of Life or something like that. And I finally figured out that it's not about the destination, Greg. It's about the journey. And I'm taking it one day at a time, sometimes one moment at a time. And in spite of myself, it's a pretty awesome place to be. That's all I got.
Thanks for sharing your story, Greg.
Thanks again, Greg. It was great.
Thanks, Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
Greg, thank you so much for sharing the story.